This day and age, many of us find ourselves during the week consumed with just a multitude of things, with full plates, and then some of us on top of that decide we need to add even more to our plates, and so you know, many of us are just running around in somewhat of a hectic pace all the time. And through that, inevitably, we do get some things done or accomplished. But I got a question for you. This past week, the things that you did do, were they of the most value? Maybe you checked off a list. You know, well, I got to do this. So really what I'm asking is, you know, this time of year we should be reflecting on our lives, what we have allowed in. Hopefully it's been positive things, but maybe we've allowed some other things to creep in. But are we accomplishing what we really should be accomplishing over the course of a day, a week, a month, a year? So just in the moment, can you think of three things that you accomplished this week that you feel truly were positive? Was there still some things on your, in a sense, your list to do that are still undone? That maybe should have truly been done over the week? And then those accomplishments that you did make, were they well-rounded in the sense they were in more than one area of your life? And I ask it that way because we have tasks in multiple areas of our life over the course of a day, a week, a month. And I'm going to talk about seven of them today. These may not be entirely all-inclusive, but spiritual growth and walk. Did you accomplish anything from that segment of your life this week? Education. Did you accomplish something positive there this week? What about your relationships? What about your career? Your health. Hobbies or entertainment? And then the last one I have is daily tasks. We're going to talk about each one of these. But hopefully, as we go about our day or our week, we realize that we have tasks in each one of these that we probably should have some type of focus on, which means at the end of a reasonable period of time, maybe sometimes it's a day, maybe sometimes it's a week, maybe sometimes it's a month, we should have accomplishments in all of these areas. So now that you're kind of thinking back to last week, what was neglected? And then you can kind of ask yourself, okay, so that did get neglected. Was it willfully neglected? And then the last question I have for you is, now looking back over your week, were you focused or were you distracted? Let's go to 2 Timothy 4. We'll start right in verse 1. In the presence of God and of Jesus Christ, who is to judge the living and the dead, and in view of his appearing and his kingdom, I solemnly urge you, proclaim the message. Be persistent, whether the time is favorable or unfavorable. Convince, rebuke, encourage, with the utmost patience in teaching. For the time is coming when people will not put up with sound doctrine, but having itching ears, they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own desires, and will turn away from listening to the truth and wander away to myths. As for you, always be sober, endure suffering, do the work of an evangelist, and carry out your ministry fully. Paul here is writing to Timothy, and he's very clearly exhorting Timothy to stay focused, prioritize, realize what you need to accomplish. For any of us to have meaningful accomplishment, we need to have a game plan. A game plan that's consistent, even when there's disruptions. And there is going to be lots of disruptions. Or you can say distractions as well. And distraction isn't always necessarily a negative thing. It's just something that you weren't anticipating. Last week, my disruption or my distraction, somewhat unplanned for, was our trip to Florida. We left Saturday evening from here and drove through the night. And I'd looked at the weather, saw that Sunday was supposed to be relatively nice. And so I thought, you know what? Because our last couple of trips, we really neglected this. We didn't really spend any time at the beach. So I told Lori, I said, we're going straight to the beach. We're not going to the house first, we're just going to the beach. And I did neglect to think about the fact that this was spring break week. So we get to Clearwater Beach, which is a world-renowned beach, and it is jam-packed. But we still enjoyed our time at the beach. But we hadn't really planned on this trip. If I would have had my druthers, I would have rather taken the time away from work or those several days, because we came back on Wednesday because I did have to work Thursday and Friday. Lori had the week off for spring break, but I had to work. I would have rather have ran out to West Virginia and seen our son, daughter-in-law, and granddaughters. But there was a couple of things that were pressing on my mind about Florida, our rental property, a renter that was in the process of moving out. I just felt like I should tidy up all of that, just to, you know, have it be a completed task in a sense. So we went down. But just because I have that disruption in my life or distraction doesn't give me excuse to neglect anything that's within those areas that I've already mentioned. And so when we have this kind of disruption or distraction, do we navigate with a goal still in mind? Or do we allow the excuse of, well, I planned on doing that, but now I can't because of this disruption? And is that truly a case? For me, when I get in the vehicle for 18 hours straight, I really enjoy using that as a time to listen to messages. So I'll spend some of the time with more of the spiritual side of things, but then also for education. Right now, waiting in the wings, I'm waiting on materials to show up, but I'm rebuilding a bathroom for a friend, or that's slated to start as soon as the bathtub finally comes in. It's been almost 3 months and it's still not here. And I'm not going to tear apart his bathroom until the tub arrives. But one of the things that I've been fairly diligent in over the last couple of months is knowing that this is coming up, tile work, some plumbing work, some electrical work in it. I'm watching YouTube to get a better understanding how are things being done today. Because inevitably, if I watch who's posting material, say, about tiling, and when they posted it, Hopefully I can recognize right away whether or not this is somebody that truly has some good experience in the field and not just a homeowner that decided to take on their first tile project and wanted to share it with the world. And I'm probably not going to glean a whole lot from that. But the guys that do this on a regular basis and they post, I can see, oh, there's a new product out and they're starting to like it. I need to consider that product. It'll speed up. For waterproofing behind the tile, that's a big area that's changed drastically over just the last couple of years. And there's new products and new techniques. So I use some of my time on our trip down to learn more about that. Aviation, it's kind of a hobby for me, but it is a hobby I want to share with the others, but I want to be a competent and ready pilot. And so I spend some time in the aviation world while I'm going. Over that 18 hours, I think I listened to about 10 to 15 minute comedy segments. And that was my entertainment for the week. I'm just one of those people that I really enjoy seeing how people do things and why they did it this way. And so in one sense, that is entertainment for me. But in terms of just outright fluff entertainment, I watched two different comedians, and I enjoyed it, but didn't spend a lot of time on that. So how many hours this past week did you allow yourself to be caught up in Satan's diversions? Was it something through personal desire that you chose to put a focus on that you knew this is not, doesn't have any positive effect on me? Now we can look at the extremes, addiction. You know, maybe there's an addiction here that we step into, but I'm not necessarily talking about just that. Again, we can fill our time up doing things that, I'll pick on entertainment for the moment. Not necessarily a bad thing. God doesn't say that we can't be entertained from time to time or shouldn't even seek it out. But how, when, and why? And if you get wrapped up into fiction, whether you like reading or watching movies or shows or something like that, if you spend 100% of your time, your entertainment time, in fiction, is there any value to that in the long run? What are you gleaning from that? The reality is, if it's all fiction, you are gleaning the reality of fiction. Your view of life is now skewed with non-knowledge. Our choice in media. Is that something we spend too much of the wrong time in? What about a poor attitude? If we choose to spend our time loathing, angry, can we be productive during that time? Probably not very productive, can we? But contrast the time that we spent in some of those areas with how many hours did we commit to the task that God had put in front of us for the week. And that's not just simply prayer and Bible study. Those are two tasks that He puts in front of us. But it's many other things too. This passage in 2 Timothy that we just read, Paul's telling Timothy to have a game plan, to stay focused on it despite whatever interruptions come along. So last week, did you start the week with a game plan? And if you did you stick to it? Let's keep going in 1 Timothy. Excuse me. No, now move over to 1 Timothy. First Timothy 4 and verse. I feel like I've got verses screwed up here. Let me know if 1 Timothy 4 and verse 6. If you put these instructions before the brothers, is that the, am I reading that? Okay, all right. If you put these instructions before the brothers and sisters, you will be glad, be a good servant of Christ, nourished on the words of the faith and of the sound teaching that you have followed. Having nothing to do with profane myths and old wives' tale, train yourself in godliness. So here, Paul brings up to Timothy a couple of areas that need to be a priority, need to be on our goal. The first one is spiritual growth. So, last week, or this coming week, are you going to start it out by each day asking God, start each day by asking God, what would he have me do and how would he have me go about doing it? Every morning. To me, this is really critical. It's our first waking moments. Father, you just blessed me with a brand new day. I don't know what you have in store for me. Will you give me enough of a heads up to know where to make sure I maneuver in the way that you would have me to? It's not a problem for us to have on our calendar already. I need to go to work from 9 to 5. My lunch hour is from noon to 1. On my lunch hour, I plan on getting an oil change. That's not a problem. But by going to God first thing in the morning and just saying, Father, I will maneuver my day any way you would have me to. What if he says, hey, on your lunch hour, I'd have you consider this. Maybe it's a phone call. Visitation. In James 4 and verse 13 says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a town and spend a year there doing business and making money. Yet you do not even know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wishes, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Anyone, then, who knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, commits sin. There's kind of a harsh warning there. And it may not be doing things that are actually sinful. It's neglecting to do other things that God's trying to tap you on the shoulder to have you do in the moment. And using the excuse of, no, I got to be doing this instead. We need to keep in mind that God only energizes what he initiates. If he didn't put it into motion, we decide to put it into motion, we can spend a lot of energy just spinning our wheels. So are we focused on what he has planned and what he has already started in us? So for this coming week, do you need to make some adjustments to the segment of your life, which I labeled spiritual growth? Do you need to add some tasks to it? A little bit different focus to it? The other thing here that Paul brought up was education. Every single one of us, despite where we're at in life, what we're doing, how we're doing it, we are being educated. So how are you being educated? Are the sources of our education of a true benefit? Wisdom. Are our sources of education based upon reality, on facts, Or again, do we lean a lot on fiction? James 3 and verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Show by your good life that your works are done with gentleness born of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not be boastful and false to the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, devilish. For where there is envy and selfish ambition, there will also be disorder and wickedness of every kind. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace for those who make peace. I know some individuals feel like they're not easily educated, or they haven't been educated, that they don't learn very easily. Some would say that they're stupid or dumb, proclaim themselves as a fool. This is one of Satan's greatest deceptions. God did not create you and I to be a fool, uneducated, lacking in knowledge. He wants us all to grow in knowledge and in wisdom. In James 1 and verse 5, we're told, if any of you is lacking in wisdom, ask God, who gives to all generously and ungrudgingly, and it will be given to you. So on a regular basis, do you ask for deeper understanding, deeper knowledge, for wisdom? Because inevitably, throughout our week, we're faced with a new challenge, something that we don't have any experience in one sense. Are we going to God and just say, Father, I don't know how to react to this. I think I need to have a conversation with someone. I don't know how to start that conversation. So what was your goal for education this past week? Did you seek greater understanding this past week? Or did you spend all of your time in entertainment? And then entertainment that didn't really present you with education, or at least good education. In 1 Timothy 4 and verse 8, kind of going through this passage, Paul says, for while physical training is of some value, godliness is valuable in every way, holding promise for both the present life and to the life to come. So here Paul brings up another area. What about our health? Did you have goals or a game plan for your health last week, this coming week? Did you make strides forward, positive strides forward, in your health last week? In 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 19, or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit within you, which you have from God, and that you are not of your own? For you were bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body. A little over a year ago, Lori and I, on the way back from Florida, had a conversation, and we decided that we didn't want to enter our 60s with a lot of extra weight. With extra weight, our lungs would be compromised. Our hearts would be compromised. Our liver, our kidneys, just our energy and all, overall. Probably have some pain due to that extra weight. So are we prioritizing our health every week Or do we just allow whatever that comes along to have our effect on us? Because at some point, the effect catches up with us and it becomes a problem. And probably a problem we didn't want. And I'm not saying everybody has to, you know, go on this really stringent health, I don't know what the word I want to use, regimen. But are you considering that? You know, it's not just about food, but it's also about activity. You know, talking with, you know, one of you here, you realize that there's a job that maybe you shouldn't do for the rest of your life. Wouldn't be good for your joints and ligaments and things like that. It's a little bit stressful on them. Same thing goes, though, for our eating. You know, what do we consume? Do we consume out of need for energy, or do we consume out of convenience? First Timothy 4 and verse 9. The saying is sure and worthy of full acceptance. For to this end we toil and struggle, because we have our hope set on the living God, who is the Savior of all people, especially of those who believe. These are the things we must insist on and teach. Let no one despise your youth, but set the believers an example in speech and in conduct, in love and in faith and purity. Here Paul goes into another area of life, relationships. How much effort, time, energy do we put into learning and becoming better spouses, better parents, better co-workers, better neighbors, or better friends? And do we consider that we're not very useful as disciples if we consistently rub people the wrong way? Or we decide to be more introverted than what we should. Meaning, no, I just don't want to be around people. It's hard to be a disciple if we're not around people. That doesn't mean God didn't create us with different personalities. Some are going to be more outgoing. But even as an introvert, maybe you choose to be in places where there's just fewer people, but not a lack of people. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 13. Until I arrive, give attention to the public reading of Scripture, to exhorting and teaching. Do not neglect the gift that is in you, which has given you through prophecy with the laying on of hands by the council of elders. Put these things into practice and devote yourself to them, so that all may see your progress. He brings up something really interesting there in verse 14. He says, which is the gift which was given to you, or the gift that is within you. Do we keep in mind that God has given each one of us multiple gifts and talents and abilities? Do we strive to grow those gifts and talents? Do we strive to share those with others? But most importantly, do we ask God to bless us with opportunity to utilize those gifts and talents? Again, that starts with your day. Then at the end here of 15, why Paul is bringing up, you know, putting these things into practice, devoting yourself to them so that you will see progress. And I think what he's saying here, bringing up here as another element, is consistency. Despite whatever is going to come about next week, are you still going to be proactively diligent? Maybe you get an upsetting phone call. Maybe your vehicle stops working. In Proverbs 6, in verse 6, go to the ant, you lazy bones. Consider its ways and be wise. Without having any chief or officer or ruler, it prepares its food in summer and gathers its sustenance in harvest. How long will you lie there, O lazy bones? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed warrior. It's not a case where we shouldn't rest, take time to rest from time to time. God commands that on the seventh day for good reason. There's some of us that would be workaholics, you know, 10 times over without the Sabbath. Let's keep going in 1 Timothy 4. Verse 16 says, pay close attention to yourself and to your teaching. Continue in these things, for in doing this, you will save both yourself and your hearers. I think you've heard me say it before. God's made a promise to us, especially as parents, that if we remain faithful for him and towards his commandments, that for 1,000 generations, he'll bless our offspring. Well, that means for you and I, whatever it is we choose to do today doesn't simply affect us. It doesn't simply affect those that are around us in the moment. It affects our great, 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 great grandchildren. There's a few more areas that we should consider. So that we can be truly productive on an ongoing basis. One of those I labeled counsel. Who are your mentors in every aspect of life? Do you have any mentors? You should. Now we get up and we talk to God every morning. But in Proverbs 15, verse 22, God also says, through David, without counsel, plans go wrong, but with many advisors, they succeed. And one of those reasons, as human beings, you and I have different personalities. We might be faced with the same challenge or the same task, but inevitably, you and I are going to view that challenge or that task from different viewpoints. And if I just decide to dive into this task or this challenge and I don't consider all the potential viewpoints I could, something's going to go wrong. An architect might be a fantastic architect, but he's a male. He has to design this building. And in the building, he knows he needs to put in ladies' restrooms. Do you think he should talk to some ladies and say, what's the biggest problem in an arena where that you find, and how could we solve it? You got any ideas? Because even in the things where areas of life where we are familiar or have experience, again, there's other viewpoints that we should maybe consider, we should ask about. So on your radar right now, is there any circumstances, events, problems that are on your radar that you could use some extra insight into? Who are you going to ask? Ask somebody. But ask somebody that would be reliable, somebody that truly does have experience and that would share with you some positive ways to go about this. I phrase it this way, a good mentor is probably on average approximately 10 to 20 years older than you. And the reason for that 10 to 20 years, and actually 20 years is maybe getting on the outskirts of things, is because 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, they were probably in much of life in a very similar circumstance that you find yourself in today. But they've lived through that experience. They've worked through the downsides, and they've seen the upsides to that experience, and now truly have a level of mature experience to be able to pass on to somebody like you. So if you're in your early 20s and you're wondering how to get a career going, talk to somebody in their early 30s. They've probably got about 10 years experience on you. Maybe somebody in their mid-30s. Same thing with finance. But maybe you're ready to buy a home and you just need somebody that has some good experience as far as a real estate agent. Well, somebody that's been doing it for 10 years, they've got some really good experience. That person that has only 1 or 2 years of experience, they might be good at it, but they're really lacking experience in a lot of areas. Doesn't mean you should totally neglect them. But somebody that has about 10 years seniority on you, they can really offer quite a bit. And throughout it all, you're seeking God's guidance in it. In Proverbs 3 and verse 5, trust in the Lord with all of your heart and do not rely upon your own insight. I didn't write this in, but remember when King David decides he's going to build the temple for God. Nathan, yes, that's I wanted to say Samuel, and I knew it wasn't Samuel. So David goes to Nathan and says, I want to do this for God. And Nathan, based upon his experience and what he knew, he just says, God's not going to have a problem with that. And Nathan turns around and leaves, and he's walking away from David, and God taps him on the shoulder, go back and tell David, I will not have him build my temple. And here's why. Did Nathan do anything wrong? No. But we shouldn't rely upon our own insight, even when we strongly, strongly think, I've got this right, I know I'm right. Well, if we don't truly know everything that God has going on in the moment. So in Proverbs 3 and verse 6, in all of your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be a healing for your flesh and a refreshment for your body. I think that verse gets looked over so often. When we go about doing things the way God would have us do it, at the time that he would have us do it, the way he would have us do it, we expend so much less energy. There's no more stress involved with it. And when we're done, we don't feel depleted. We feel lifted up. We feel energized. It's Isaiah 55, verse 6. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake their way and the unrighteous their thoughts. Let them return to the Lord that they may have mercy on them and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. Next area I have down is career. So God said, 6 days shall you labor and do all of your work. It's not a case where we get to avoid work. It's not even a case where we get to avoid, in one sense, being servants or slaves to another, under the guidance, the jurisdiction, the authority, however you want to phrase it, we're probably going to be under somebody else's direction most of our lives. But this thing called career, do we make sure that it's not a distraction? That it's not something that is causing problems in our lives? That it is actually a blessing for us? And not just financially. Talking with one of you here in the last couple of weeks, you got a new job, and was the employer informed about the Sabbath and holy days? I kind of asked that question, and your response was, I didn't have to. They asked me if there's any days I needed off during the week. And they granted those days. No stress, no worries. But if we're going to claim that, are we going to be diligent in it? Are we 100% diligent in keeping the Sabbath and holy days when it comes to career? If you've got a job that's going to place you on call from time to time, does your employer understand? Nope, not at these times. Sorry. Clay, several times over the last year and a half, had to reiterate to his employer that I understand it's a storm and it's storm duty, and I will come and help out as much as I can, but from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown, I'm not available. Even if I'm on site, if you want me out of state, I will go out of state, but I'm shutting down from sundown to sundown. And if it makes more sense not to take me, I'm fine with that. I'll miss out on the extra pay or whatever. Or do we allow our employers to see that we'll cave in from time to time? Because you do it once, they've got you. They're going to ask again and again and again and again. And after about the second again, they demand it. No, you have to be here. If we're not going to be diligent in keeping God's Sabbaths, His holy convocations, the way He would have us, because we allow from time to time a job or a career as an excuse, then why should He bless us through that career, that job, that employer? Why should we expect any benefit whatsoever? In Colossians 3 and verse 22, slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, not only while being watched or in order to please them, but wholeheartedly fearing the Lord. Whatever your task, put yourselves into it as if it's being done for the Lord and not for the masters, since you know that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance of your reward. You serve the Lord Christ. You know, do we remember that Joseph and King David worked for others or were under the thumb of others for many years? A job or a career where we are under somebody else's guidance or leadership is always an opportunity to hone our skills for God's glory. Probably going to have co-workers that we can share an example to. Next area I've got wrote down is hobbies. Like a job, most often a hobby comes with great opportunities to glorify God and to serve others. But a hobby also comes with great opportunity to neglect other areas of your life that you should prioritize. I've always had a big hobby of music. And for a lot of years, I played in secular bands. and I enjoyed it. But was that really the best thing I could be doing with that gift or talent or with that hobby? Today, I get just as much of enjoyment, if not more so, from playing non-secular music to non-secular audiences in one sense. The last thing I have down in the list is daily tasks. So every day throughout our life, there's a big handful of things that you and I just are going to have to do. May not be the same ones every day, but home maintenance. That gutter drooping, not catching water quite the right way, or maneuvering water where it should be, or diverting water the way it should. That drooping gutter, if that's not maintained, water is getting somewhere it is not supposed to be, and there is wood rotting somewhere. That's a problem. That could be a huge problem because it's at the roof line. And it's probably not just in at the eaves, but over time, that water goes down the side of the wall, the inside of the wall. It attacks the insulation. And then eventually it gets to the foundation, and all of a sudden your floor joist ends are rotting out. Clearing the dishes out of the sink, that's home maintenance. Car maintenance. Do we take care of the vehicles God has blessed us with? Again, under daily tasks, I wrote down eating and sleeping. Do we take time out of our day to re-energize through food the way that we should? Or are you just grabbing the next energy drink, hoping that'll get you through? What about sleep? Do you give yourself enough time to re-energize through sleep? To me, all of this kind of boils down to stewardship. Stewardship is you and I prioritizing all that God has put into our hand. If He's blessed us with a family, we take care of the family. If He's blessed us with a home, we take care of the home. If He's blessed us with a car, we take care of the car. Pets, our neighbors. Last night, or well, it wasn't last night, it was after work yesterday. My mechanic had texted me on a question about a ring. And I responded back to him. And I said, you know what, I'm going to be real close to your house in about 15 minutes. I'll just stop by and take a look at it. Okay, great. I get there, and as my mechanic, he has his shop out back at his home. And he was done for the day, but he's still back at the shop, and he's got another friend back there. And he said, hey, Aaron, he said, would you like a beer? And at first I said no. I said, no, I'll just look at that. And then I realized, you know what, Rich and I, we enjoy talking with each other, and we rarely get the opportunity outside of business. So I changed my mind. I said, I'll take one beer. And hung out for about 20 minutes with him and friend, met another guy, and shared some things that were, each of us shared some things that were going on in our lives. And I felt really good in the long run because I could have just said, nope, I know the Sabbath is coming. I just want to get home and get settled in for the Sabbath. That 20 minutes didn't hurt me in any way. Rich and I, the mechanic, we've had some really interesting things happening between us over the years that both of us looked at, that God had a very big hand into it. One year I walked into his shop to drop off my car, and he heats with wood. He has a big one of those outdoor boilers. He fills with wood all winter long. That heats his home, but also heats his shop. And it was towards the end of the heating season, you know, probably this time of year. And as I'm dropping off my vehicle, he just said, he says, did you see how much wood I have left out there? I said, yeah, it's not a whole lot, but I know we're getting to the end. He says, I'm thinking about giving it away. I said, what do you mean? He said, I know a guy. He says, he's totally out of wood. He heats his house with it. He needs it. I said, Rich, give it to him. I've got a stack of wood that's seasoned in my side yard. It's all yours. Just come take it. And he just looked at me like, what? And I'm the same thing. It's like God arranged something there that was so cool. But Rich and I have had several things like that. And so yesterday when he says, hey, Aaron, you want to hang out for a few minutes and have a beer? I just said, yeah, I don't know why, but yeah, I think I should. And I was totally comfortable in it, wasn't pressed for time, and it was just one beer. So are we prioritizing all that God has placed in our hand? Not simply to maintain it, but to grow or build it better through our care. Are we going to give God back more than what he placed in our hands? So do you have a game plan for success for next week? The seven areas that I went through is spiritual growth in our walk, education, relationships, career, health, hobbies, and daily tasks. Again, I don't feel like that's the only list. You can add to it, you can delete from it, probably combine some of those in one way or another. But you and I should be successful every day, every week, every year, no matter what comes along. But the only way we're going to be successful, here, let me rephrase it. The only way we're going to glorify our Heavenly Father is if we adjust things to his game plan and we stick to it. Let's finish up in 1 Peter 5. First Peter 5 and verse 8. Discipline yourselves. Keep alert. Like a roaring lion, your adversary, the devil, prowls around looking for someone to devour. Resist him. Here, a couple months ago, I had to be, a friend of mine had to reiterate to me this from the standpoint we were talking about. Temptation. And I phrased that I'm consistently asking God to remove the temptations that come along in life. And he just said, well, Aaron, you realize that temptation's not going away. I'm like, duh, yeah, I guess I knew that. And so I literally had to change my mindset when I went to God. It's like, no, give me the strength to what it says right here, to resist, to remain steadfast, to put our faith to work. Because we know that our brothers and sisters in all the world are undergoing the same kinds of suffering. And after you have suffered for a little while, the God of all grace, who has called you to his glory, eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore. Oh, that's such an awesome word, restore. We don't even know what the original was supposed to be like. But he's going to restore us. Now, that 69 Camaro, maybe we've seen pictures of it when it was fresh out of the showroom in 69, but 10 years later, had quite a few dings and nicks on it. Paint had been changed. The upholstery was ripping and tearing, cracking. And then somebody decides to restore it. And they literally take it apart right down to nothing. It's just the frame, just the body. And they strip everything that was off the body, off that metal. They patch the holes. They put new color on it. And then they put all new wiring in it. All new gaskets. All new pistons. Brakes. The whole thing, everything, every nut and bolt gets replaced. And then we see it again and we realized it's even better than the original. Because in aviation, we've got these people that decide to build a kit plane. They order a kit and they have the parts start arriving to their home. Usually it's in their garage or even their basement, and they start assembling. And because it's theirs, they take those parts and they don't care how much time. They're not on a deadline. If this takes them 2 or 3 or 10 years to build this plane, and you'd probably be shocked at how many people never complete their plane. And part of it is because every time they get the next little piece of kit and the instructions, they meticulously go through it. And if there's a burr on some of the threads, they remove the burrs. And then they assemble it. They put so much extra detail that went, you know, into it. And I think that's what our Father did with us originally. He took his time with us. But now we're cracked. We're needed more new paint or whatever. And he says he's going to restore us, support us, strengthen us, and establish us. To him be the power forever and ever. Amen.